There is a phenomenon, a condition that everyone here is familiar with, although I don't think it has a name, at least not in English. It's when you've known something or you've known about something for so long that you can't ask questions about it anymore, even though there are parts of it you don't understand. So, for example, you know a family for a long time, but you don't actually know how this one's related to that one, and you can't ask anymore because you've known them for 20 years, and if you ask, you're going to be embarrassed, so you just pretend you know. Now, in Judaism, this happens all the time. People will always say, "Rabbi, I'm so embarrassed, I don't know the answer to this, but can you please tell me, like, what is Shmini Atzeret anyway? Or, I've heard people are fasting next week, what's that about?" And you would be surprised how often rabbis do the same thing. Say, "Gee, I knew this last year, I remember looking it up, but it's been a year and a lot's gone on." And while I would not suggest to you that rabbis ever use Google searches to give you answers, I've just heard, that sometimes the computer is helpful. And I thought that this morning, even though the truth is that the biblical command to count the Omer does not come for a couple weeks until Parshat Emor, since we have started to count the Omer, and since my guess is that for many people here, counting the Omer is something they vaguely heard of but don't know about, and even for those who've heard about it, your knowledge of what it is to count the Omer could be expanded, I would explain this morning why we count the Omer, what the Omer is, and three different levels of its significance: agricultural, historical, and mystical. And then I'm going to end up with the New York Times. I'll explain in a minute. First of all, we started counting the Omer the second night Seder. Mimacharat HaShabbat. There's a lot of dispute about a lot of things in the Omer. One is when you should start counting, but finally the rabbis decided the second night of the Seder you begin, which makes today what day of the Omer? Anyone know? I heard 8th, I heard 10th. Today's the 9th. We're about to count, right? The one after, and you can't say what it is because then you count it. At least by my count, that's what it is. I hope I didn't get it wrong at the very beginning. Tonight you'll be counting the number that you mentioned before. And if you say the number, then you have to count it without a blessing. But if you don't say the number, then you can count it with a blessing. Now, what is it you are counting? First of all, you're counting the days of the harvest. We begin with the barley harvest, and it goes all the way to the wheat harvest. That's the agricultural significance. Now, I don't know anything about barley or wheat harvests, and I'm not going to pretend to you that I do. I grew up in Philadelphia, where there were supermarkets but no harvests. Farmland was something you drove through on the way to Hershey where you could eat chocolate. That's all I know about harvests. I spent once a week on a moshav in Israel and proved myself to have grown up in a city. That's all I'll say. They were not optimistic about my future as a farmer in the land of Israel. Nonetheless, the truth is that we all live in one way or another on the land, and a reminder of the fact that the harvest is central to our lives, even though we may go to the supermarket to get the results of the harvest, is a salutary, it's a good thing to remember, and the Omer is in part about the offering of the temple and the harvest, and I'll say something about barley later on, because there is one thing I know about the barley harvest, and it has nothing to do with alcoholic beverages, in case you were wondering. But there's a more powerful meaning for us today than the harvest meaning, and that is that we count 50 days. It's really 7 times 7, right? 7 times 7, and then the 50th day is Shavuot, right? And that is the time between, historically, the Exodus from Egypt and the receiving of the Torah. Now, first, before we return to that idea, it is also traditionally, historically associated with a time of mourning, a time of sadness. And believe it or not, it's not clear why that is either. The Talmud mentions that a plague broke out among the students of Rabbi Akiva. And some say the plague stopped on Lag BaOmer, the 33rd day of the Omer, which is why on that day there are celebrations, there are bonfires around the grave of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai in Israel, who was a mystical rabbi and reputed to be the author of the Zohar. That day it stopped, and so some explain that the plague among Rabbi Akiva's students stopped on that day. But there are at least two curious things about this plague. One is that they say the plague broke out because the students didn't show each other enough respect. That's a pretty severe punishment, right? Thousands of people dying in a plague because they didn't show each other enough respect. And second, there's no mention of customs of mourning in the Talmud. It doesn't come for hundreds and hundreds of years later. Even Maimonides in the Middle Ages doesn't seem to know that you're supposed to mourn during the Omer. Now, why is that? One very powerful theory is that the rabbis in the Talmud couldn't speak about it, but in fact, this had to do with the revolt against Bar Kokhba. Because Rabbi Akiva's students, we know, were involved in the revolt, and we know that many of them died fighting for the freedom of the land of Israel before the Romans crushed the revolt. So maybe plague is a sort of code word, and we're supposed to understand that it was battle. And maybe on Lag BaOmer, either the battle stopped or the Jews won a battle. We don't know. We don't know. But whatever happened in that ancient time, the custom of mourning during the time of the Omer exists till this day, but it exists differently in different parts of the world. Some people mourn until Lag BaOmer and then don't mourn anymore. Some people mourn mainly the first week of the Omer and mourn less. Some people will do weddings, some people won't do weddings. Some people will grow what's called a sphira beard. That is, they won't shave during the Omer. Some people do shave during the Omer. It's Jewish, what can I tell you? It's very confusing. It depends where you go, what rabbi you listen to, what authority you believe. There are different customs. Some people listen to music during the Omer. That's why we put the commemoration of the Shoah, Yom HaShoah, in this period. Because other catastrophes associated with this time are mourned at this time. For example, in 1648 and 49, the Chmelnytsky pogroms occurred at this time during the Omer, and so that added to the custom of mourning among Eastern European Jews, who, many of whom are very severe in their mourning customs during the time of the Omer, up until Lag BaOmer, when some stop and some pause. So we have agricultural reasons to count the Omer, and we have historical reasons. The most powerful, of course, not being mourning, but being the journey from Egypt to Sinai. And that brings us to the mystical reasons. The last seven of the Sfirot, of the emanations of God according to the mystical tradition, each one is a characteristic of the human being that you're supposed to work on in the time of the Omer. Each week is devoted to one of the Sfirot. That's Chesed, Gevura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and Malchut. All of them having their own characteristics. So, for example, Chesed, which is love, compassion, you work on that 1 week of the Omer. And you work on the other characters during each day of that week. So one day of that week, Gevurah, which means judgment or strength, you try to add strength to your capacity to love during that week. You take the next day, balance, you try to add balance to your capacity to love. And you can rotate through these qualities, and therefore, when you've finished this 49-day self-improvement spiritual program, you are ready to receive the Torah. That's the mystical significance of the Omer, and You can take a look at many different things. In fact, there's a rabbi named Simon Jacobson who wrote a book that details day by day this self-improvement during the Sfirat HaOmer. Now, I want to give you the interpretation that I derived from the New York Times. I thought I knew how I was going to conclude this sermon until I read the New York Times this morning. And in the religion column, there was a story about a book that apparently has been traveling around evangelical circles called The Last Month of Your Life. And it's all about what you would do if you had a month left to live. You understand the idea. It helps you focus on what's important, right? If you had a month to live, you probably, you know, wouldn't spend a lot of time going to movies that you don't really want to see, for example. Whereas if you don't think you have a month to live, you might waste a lot of time going to second-rate movies. People do, I'm told. And I realized that really that's the significance of Sfirat HaOmer. Think about it. The Jewish people leave Egypt and they're on their way to Sinai. They have nothing. The day before, when they were slaves, every minute of their day was filled with activities they had to do, right? You've got to bring the big bricks and you've got to build the mortar and you have to serve your master. And now all of a sudden their days are empty. They have nothing. It's like, forgive the comparison, it's as if all of a sudden one day they retire and there's nothing. And now they have to fill their lives with things that are meaningful, that are not imposed. And during those 50 days, between the Exodus and the receiving of the Torah, what do they do? What do they do? First of all, they have to relate to their families. I mean, think about this. Think about the difference in family relations when you come home at night after you've literally been slaving all day, and now when you're walking together in the desert, and you have to fill up hours and hours and hours and hours of conversation. We know that they go astray because they build the golden calf. But why do they go astray? Because they have not been able to train themselves to receive the Torah. They've had no guidance. And so Sfirat HaOmer is built on this idea that you count every day, because every day counts. From the moment you leave Egypt, that is, from the moment you grow into your own will, from the moment you're able to make choices, from the moment you can decide how to live your life, every day counts. The guidance that we receive on Shavuot, we have actually already received, right? Shavuot is the time that the Torah is given, but it's already been given. And so Sfirat HaOmer is about focusing on what is most important in your life. And if you think of it as a time of mourning, that makes sense. Because the truth is that that's the task of an avel, the task of a mourner, is to focus on what matters most. Whom do you love? What do you care about? What vanities and insignificances and trivialities can you strip from your life and still live meaningfully? That's what it is to be an avel. What lessons do you derive from people whom you remember? That's what the Omer is about. And every day, as we count the Omer, with the same eagerness that a child counts off the days till the end of school, right? Day by day by day by day. Each day, as we count that on the way to Sinai, we are supposed to be stripping off some of the less attractive accretions of our life and taking on some of the significance of what the Torah has to teach us. So, you have about 40 days left to count the Omer, day by day, until we arrive together anew at the foot of the mountain. And that brings me to the one thing I know about barley. Rabbi Herzog, who was the chief rabbi of Israel, pointed out a long time ago that barley is what the Talmud calls a ma'achal behema. It's food for an animal. Wheat, on the other hand, is what human beings are supposed to eat. And yet, both are offered in the temple. Because we start off as appetites, as animals, and we refine ourselves spiritually until we are ready to stand before God at Sinai. That's also part of what it means to be a slave. What it means to be a slave is not to have an internal life, not to be able to worship, not to have space to think. But when we take barley and we raise it to the quality of the offering of the temple, that's what we do with ourselves. Part of us is animal, part of us is angel. Both those pieces of a human being, both of them get offered before God. So on the Omer, I hope that you will, together with all of Israel, take this journey from animal to angel, from barley to wheat, from Egypt to Sinai, so that when the time comes, we will stand together as we did once long ago and say, Na'aseh v'nishma, God, we will follow your Torah. Now instruct us as to your ways. Shabbat shalom.